Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that this show brings on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And remember, if you can't listen live, go to our website at answers.network and browse through a variety of heartfelt and enlightening topics that I'm confident that there will be something that you will find that will bring greater joy to your life or to someone that you care for. Now, social media group, or to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive influence in the world together, which is exactly what our guest today is doing. The topic that we're looking for answers today is neurofeedback. Our guest, Michael P. Cohen, gave up a lucrative career in the high-tech industry and opened a neurofeedback clinic in 1996. Now, a leading expert in brain biofeedback, he's helped thousands of clients and taught neurofeedback to more than 2,500 physicians and mental health professionals around the world. He runs a very successful neurofeedback clinic in Jupiter, Florida. Yep. And wanting to help even more people to learn about neurofeedback, he wrote his new book, Neurofeedback 101. Michael, welcome to Answers.
Educating people.
All right. Well, the first thing I would love to start with is, can you share with our audience how you were inspired to get involved in neurofeedback?
Well, my dad in 1994, in his late 70s, retired, immediately crashed, or within a few months crashed into a terrible depression, which was called at the time agitated depression. Now that I know more, it would really be called psychotic depression. So he was extremely obsessed with his thoughts. He couldn't get out of his head. He was, you know, pacing up and down for hours at a time. He couldn't watch TV. You couldn't have a conversation with him. He couldn't read. I mean, he was a very smart guy. So nothing was working. We took him to the psychiatrist. They did everything they knew to do, every drug they knew. Nothing worked. They did shock therapy, which is still done for depression. Did not work. And so it's like, well, you may have to institutionalize him. Well, that was not a good solution. So I kept digging and digging and digging, found a number of kind of nutritional oriented approaches, which did not work in his case. And then heard from a psychiatrist kind of randomly I met, go, have you heard of neurofeedback? No, I'd never heard of it. So investigated it, ended up having to call psychologists and MDs all around the country. Can this really work? You know, just rewire your brain. Is that really possible? Yes. They said, yes, people were willing to talk to me. And so I got some feedback. I had to convince my mom to take my dad to do this, which the closest place was 6 hours away, 2 hours north of Atlanta. I was in Atlanta. And so she said, he's up there for 6 days with my mom. I come up on the sixth day when I'm not working. He's in the place. I walk in. He goes, so Mike, how's it going? I'm like, okay, that was very different. That was not the same. And it was just this remarkable shift in 6 days. How in the world is that even possible? Now, I don't want to say that it just held and this severe problem just went away and there were still more things that needed to be done, but it launched a change that led him to get better. And so we combined some things. But at that point, I was like, I got to help this guy get this thing out. I mean, everybody needs to know about this. And so that's really what started me into the field, is just helping the guy that helped my dad. And then I said, what if I brought you to Atlanta and we opened a center and we tried to get this out there? And that's how I started. That's what I did.
Well, and I started things that a lot of people weren't really aware of. And they started it for reasons just like yourself, that something happens with one of our loved ones and that stirs a passion that allows us to jump forward with things that maybe we hadn't heard of or that we weren't aware of. And I know that as you and I were talking about right before we went on the air, I was introduced to neurofeedback also in the mid-90s, where a relative had broken their neck. And I was amazed at the technology that it was essentially able to jump past a break in the nerves and to provide what was necessary for him to use his upper extremities. And so, and at the same time, I also thought, I go, why don't people know about it? And his parents and his sisters his siblings had taken him all over the world trying to find things that would help him in that situation. Tell us a little bit about, how this works, because again, for me, I was hearing about it. They're trying to explain how it's kind of jumping a break in the nervous system. But I don't know that would be the case if we're talking about what you're talking about with extreme depression or anxiety.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about depression, anxiety, mood issues, sleep. I mean, and then we could, if we want, touch on brain injury and concussion and things like that a little bit later, which is a little more complex potentially.
Which would be wonderful. But part of me and the investigator is in me is, how does it work?
So I want to frame it, if you don't mind, in kind of two ways. I'm going to give you an example of how somebody responded. And I'm going to go, what did we do to achieve that, if that's okay? So I had a woman that came in who was about 26. She was actually studying to be a therapist. She had had a traumatic event 6 months prior, which was she'd been raped. She was no longer able to work. She really was just agitated and edgy and hyper. She got triggered by everything and really was just not functioning well at all. And so she came into our office, and there is a particular type of training over the right temporal and right parietal lobe that helps you be, the right temporal is, we're going to exercise the part of your brain that helps you be calm. So I'll talk about how that works. And then we're going to exercise the part of your brain in the back, which is part of the parietal lobe, which helps you feel more safe. So if you think about her trauma, being extremely anxious and then being not safe, how do you affect that? Okay, you can give her pills, but the pills weren't working for her at all. And, how do you get the brain to calm down when you've had this extreme event, which many of us have had some kind of traumatic event?
Sure.
So we literally helped her exercise the circuits in her brain, which I'll talk about in a minute. And in the course of 30 minutes, she just settled into the chair as she's getting feedback. Basically, the computer is telling her, okay, your brain's being more calm. It's not. Your brain being more calm. It's not. Her brain was learning to be more calm. At the end of 30 minutes, she sits up and she says, I think I'm feeling almost normal, which was, she says, that just has not happened. I have not felt calm like this since the event happened. Okay, so now let's use the investigator view to go, what the heck is that?
Exactly.
So we're going to talk about sensors. So what neurofeedback fundamentally is a gym for the brain. That's what it is. Meaning if I exercise my muscles, then if I pump those muscles, do I get stronger? I think so. Most of us know you pump those muscles using weights, whatever, you get stronger. Well, I need to pump your neurons to make the neurons over your calming part of your brain to be stronger, to help the neurons over the part of your brain that helps you be calm, and feeling more calm in your body. Mm-hmm. You're hypervigilant because of this traumatic event. How do you do that? You put sensors on the head that measure your electrical activity of your brain, which is called an EEG. We all have electricity in our brain. That's how you're thinking. That's how you're paying attention. That's how you manage your emotions. That's how you sleep. And so we measure the activity over the right temporal lobe. We measure that, or any part of your brain. We measure the activity over here. And it's connected to a computer. And the computer is constantly telling you, okay, you're making more of this. You're not. We're measuring a pattern of calm. So we're going to measure the pattern of your brain that helps you be more calm. We're going to play it back to you. And you know how when there's music playing and there's a really good beat and all of a sudden you start moving to the beat?
Yeah.
How does your brain do that? You know, it's picking up a pattern and it starts reinforcing that pattern. So we're telling you, here's the pattern your brain's making. This is the calm pattern. And your brain starts literally kind of tapping along. Now, you're hearing sound or you're watching a movie. So imagine watching a movie and the movie fades out when your brain's not being calm. And as soon as your brain is being more calm, it fades in. There's sound in the background. When you're making more calm, you hear this one sound. So your brain is literally learning how to reinforce a pattern. It's not a mental process. I can't think, I'm going to increase the number of neurons firing over my right temporal lobe. I don't think you could do that, right? But this special technology, just, you know, we have weights that help us strengthen our arms. Now we have special technology that says, we're going to help you strengthen different parts of your brain.
Now, how would this compare with DBS, with deep brain stimulation, where they're actually going in and physically doing it? So I'm imagining you're doing it from the outer part of the skull. They're doing it on the inside. And is this something to where they should be working together?
Boy, is that a complex question. Let me tackle that in a couple ways. One, let's talk about stimulation versus biofeedback. All right. Okay. So there are a variety of types of stimulation technologies that basically say, I'm going to zap your brain with some kind of low-level magnetic field or electrical pulse or something like that, and I'm going to stimulate your brain to change by how I'm stimulating it. So deep brain stimulation, something called transcranial magnetic stimulation, which you may have heard of, which is being used a lot for depression. Also, DBS is for more severe depression. There are other methods for stimulating the brain, and they can be quite helpful. There's a variety of ways to do that. They can be incredibly helpful. What I'm describing is your brain changing itself. So when I describe that I'm putting a sensor over, let's say, the right temporal lobe and the right parietal lobe. So is the machine, when it's telling me what my brain is it doing something to me, like in stimulation? No. It's telling my brain, okay, this is what you're doing. So have you ever been on a balance board?
Yeah.
Okay. So most people have been on a balance board. When you get on a balance board, first time you tip over. And then you get a little shaky. And then you sometimes get even. So how does your brain actually learn to balance? So it is getting feedback. I fell over. Okay, now I'm being shaky. And how does it learn to be steady? The brain is learning how to balance you. You have no idea how I just didn't shake. Now I'm steady. How did I make it this? I'm telling your brain, here's what you're doing. I'm giving it instant feedback, and it rapidly learns to balance based on the feedback, which in this case is watching a movie or a Pac-Man that goes and stops, or there's sounds, but your brain is getting instant feedback, just like if you were in a balance board. Hey, you're doing good.
As you were saying that, when you were talking about the balance board, I envisioned surfing.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, you know, most anybody, if you've ever learned to surf, when the first few times you try to get up on that board, you fall right over. But eventually you learn to get up and you learn to push in the right places to make sure that you stay more balanced. And then you continue to get better. What you're describing to me suggests that it could be everything, whatever it is. If I want to be better at something, why wouldn't I add in neurofeedback so that I would get better faster?
Does that make sense? Basically exercising your brain circuits to perform better. You just, that's what you just said, I think.
Yes.
And all neurofeedback is performance training. It just happens to be, I want my emotional circuit. Let's say I say something nasty to you and you react really strongly to me. That would not be so good in the show, but it could happen, right? So if I am easily triggered emotionally, how do I strengthen the circuits that are, how do I strengthen the circuits that help me balance my emotions so I don't go off the deep end when you say something? Or let's say I have a routine, I try to go to sleep. You know, how many people actually have that? It's quite a lot. We're kind of in an epidemic of it right now. I don't, post-COVID, it seems to. So, I mean, just people are stressed. And so how do you strengthen the circuit that says, okay, quiet your mind. Okay, let's handle this emotion and not blow up or get upset or get mad. So you can exercise to let the circuits of your brain do a better job of controlling your emotions, of quieting your mind, or of just paying attention to this boring person that just keeps talking, except you have to take a test. And you better pay attention, even though they're boring, which we all deal with. So how do you do that? And pills can help you. Stimulation can help you. But can I teach my brain to just be stronger? That's what neurofeedback does.
Yeah. And I like that in cases. The pills or medications that they're suggesting are just masking whatever the problem is. You're not really... you're not really fixing a problem. You're just masking it so that it's not, it doesn't appear outwardly to be a problem. So I love what you're doing and the way that you're explaining it. Are there any studies, are they using this like in the prison system and such to be able to de-escalate? When you just mentioned about this inability to sit back and respond and be calm to somebody that is more aggressive towards you or something,
so I'm gonna
are they
share,
doing studies in prisons? Because it seems like that would be pretty logical.
I'm going to caution about that question.
Okay.
There's been a couple of small studies done with juvenile delinquents where it had a really nice impact, but there were only a couple of small studies. There's not much funding. You know how this goes. There's not a lot of funding for this kind of thing. But I want to share one story. There was a homeless shelter in Houston, Texas that had some funding for neurofeedback. And it's kind of homeless addiction kind of thing. So there was a large effort by this nonprofit to fund. It was a Christian-based organization. They had their program and then they added neurofeedback. And so when I went to visit them, this was like in 2000, I met the director and we're walking around. He introduces me to this really tall, strong-looking young Black man who's probably 30. And he says, talk to Jerry. And I talked to him. I said, so what did you do the neurofeedback? What was this like? He says, well, I'll tell you. You know, I've always had a problem with my temper. And it's landed me in jail two or three times. And I just could not control my temper. He says, since I've done the neurofeedback, I can control my temper. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm getting married next week.
That's great.
And I remember that forever because just the nicest guy, but he couldn't control. How do you learn to control your temper if you don't know how to do it? And meds can be helpful, but it's not, for many people, a perfect long-term solution. And here's a guy that's a perfect example. But that being said, I will say, even though you'd think this would be a perfect place for the prison system has its own challenges. And so I've been told by people who work in there who brought neurofeedback in, you've got to also deal with the dynamic of the prison system, and that makes things more challenging. So where is it mostly used? It's used with kids with all kinds of behavioral problems, ADHD, anxiety, learning problems, huge number of people seeking help other than meds there in private, a lot of private practice with people with anxiety, with depression, with migraines, I mean, it's incredible for migraines. And actually, the original work was done. There's like 20 studies for seizures, but most neurologists don't use it. So there's not the people who you would think would use it don't. No marketing for that. And, you know, so the people who use it the most, frankly, are mental health therapists who are using it for anxiety, depression, sleep, and a variety of other things. And then the kids. I mean, huge number of parents wanting help for this.
And you mentioned grants that have had them. And I'm blessed that I haven't, but I was amazed to see how debilitating it was for them. And I noticed in your book, when I was going through your book, that you've had a lot of success in that area. Can you share with us a couple of stories of where you've dealt with somebody that was dealing with migraines? And share with us a little bit about, I mean, how long does this take? You mentioned earlier where somebody literally in a matter of hours was feeling better, but what's something that is more
By the way, average? That was 30 minutes.
Or 30 minutes, yeah. That's great.
But I'll tell you an interesting migraine case. And I don't want to say this is unique to me. I have learned from lots of people all over the world that how to apply technology for migraines. A lot of people, I mean, not as many as I'd like, but there are people all over the world that do offer some of these services. But there was a nurse practitioner who was in her mid-50s who had long-term debilitating migraine since she was about 10 or 12. I can't remember exactly. So, you know, when you get to be a nurse practitioner, you have all the paraphernalia you need to control it. You know, you have to use very heavy-duty meds to control really bad migraines. So she had all those. She had shots. She could give herself shots at home. And she would still end up once every couple of months in the hospital having to be dealing with her migraine. So her migraines were multiple times a month for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And when she'd have them, you know, she could, you know, the visual was really bad. She couldn't handle bright lights. It was severe. So we started working with her, and within 4 or 5 sessions, she started noticing some reduction in the intensity and in the number of sessions that she was having. That was coming twice a week or even once a week. And then about the 5th or 6th session she came in, her husband, who's an engineer, brought her at when we opened. And he's like, I'm on my way to the hospital. She just had a really, really bad one. And let's, you know, can you do anything? Okay. Like, so I said to her, she was not looking good. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your migraine? She's like a 15. You know, I've been throwing up all night. I am nausea. I just feel awful. So we almost carried her into the office. And it took about 40 minutes for us to get that 15 down to about a 3.
Wow.
So now I've done this a while, so I'm a little bit comfortable with that kind of thing, but she's still tricky. So it took me a little effort to figure that out. And so she comes out, she's doing kind of okay, other than she's exhausted from being through that. And her husband just says, I've been with her. I've been through the hospital so many times. They give her all these drugs and she's completely out of it for a day just to recover. And look at her right now. Can't even imagine how this could happen. So let's ask the question, what did we do?
Yes.
Because what is neurofeedback? This is she exercised her brain. I didn't do anything to her. I helped her. I measured certain patterns that I know tend to help stabilize migraines. I gave her brain that she literally heard sound that every time her brain was making more of the stable pattern, she'd get sounds that helped support that. And her brain, just like it gave her a migraine, her brain was able to take her migraine away. So I did not do it. She did it. You know, if you go to the gym and your shoulder hurts, and it really hurts, and then actually it loosens up and now it feels better, that's kind of what happened there.
Well, using that analogy, is there something that she can continue to do? In other words, how many sessions, you know, would somebody do? And then are there things that we can do to continue, you know, in fact, let's not only use the gym, but let's use the gym and the pandemic. So as somebody who goes to the gym, once the pandemic hit, it was a period of time to where I wasn't working out. And then I decided, okay, well, I'm going to build one in my home. And so I actually built one, you know, a makeshift one in the home so that we could still get that type of physical exercise because we didn't know how long this was going to last.
Right.
Using that analogy, equate that to neurofeedback on what this client or someone else can do. You know, what's their homework when you send them home?
Well, I'm going to distinguish a little bit, but in between okay. different types of clients. But let's take this client. Yeah. Over the course of 20 or 30 sessions, she gradually reduced the number of migraines so that she was essentially having one or two migraines a year and much less intense. And she would have headaches. But she says, I used to have headaches. I had migraines and they were debilitating. Now I got headaches I can handle. She has adapted some of her nutrition. She mm-hmm. actually has some kind of, she has an oxygen. She's taking an oxygen that actually has helped reduce when she does start to get things. I've suggested that she even get a machine at home. She, you know, it is possible to get a system that you could use at home if you have the right support, because you do have to have somebody who knows what they're doing to tell you.
Sure.
But she's actually not needed to do that because she has done so much better and it's been more stable. That's a kind of case. However, let's say you've had anxiety for 30 years. I was an anxious kid. I'm 40 years old. I'm still really anxious. And boy, the pandemic made me more. And I need to learn how to calm down and not drive myself crazy and just not have my heart race and have my stomach settle down and quiet my mind, because all that stuff. I mean, I'm just giving some common symptoms.
Yeah.
So that's going to probably take long, you know, that could take a while to, because they've got sure. a lifetime. How are you going to, you're saying, how am I going to rewire my brain? How long should it take to rewire my brain if it's been like this for 30 to 40 years? Well, it's probably not 10 sessions. I mean, it's going to, you know, how long will it take to get in shape at the gym even? But this is learning new patterns. And so fortunately, once your brain starts to learn those, it helps. So there's, does the neurofeedback help with anxiety? Immensely. How do you continue to support it? There's a variety of tools. So could you get a neurofeedback piece of equipment at home? Yes. Is it on the more expensive side? Yes. Are there other neuro tools that are more for home that could be helpful? So we guide people to a lot of different kinds of tools. From, there's something called cranial electrical stimulation. You put these little electrical things on your ear and it calms you down. It produces microcurrent and it mm-hmm. calms, for many people, it calms you down. It's like electronic Valium, if you will, but you don't have to use a pill. You can actually just calm yourself down. Once your whole nervous system has learned to settle more, there are multiple tools, from cranial electrical stimulation to pulse magnetic field. And, you know, I can't explain what all these different tools are. There's light stimulation, and sound stimulation. There's actually, just listened to a great podcast on a place called Brain FM that mm-hmm. is a tool for listening to things that calm you down and help you sleep. So are these things that can be done at home? Yeah. I mean, if you're really severe, is it going to solve your problem? Maybe not. But once you start to get in the right direction, it can have a big impact, tools like that. And last thing, it's not last, it should probably be first. For people with anxiety or panic attacks or the racing mind when they're trying to sleep, which is just a really common set of symptoms, I have listened to a couple of tremendously good talks on blood sugar mm-hmm. and how blood sugar triggers poor blood sugar regulation This is not just let's take your blood sugar, go to the doctor and see how you are. This is your day-to-day, moment-to-moment changes in blood sugar. And how do you learn to control it? So if you go to YouTube and, I could give you some show links to a couple of the talks if you'd like on how do you keep people from having anxiety attacks, eat better and control your blood sugar, and that will have a big difference. So this is not just what does neurofeedback do? It's what can I do to help myself reduce some of this? And some of these people think are all mental, but blood sugar is a lot.
That, but it really also to me just tells me this is why you're such a perfect fit for this show, because you're not going, well, the way that I do things is the only way that it helps. You know, you're sharing all the things that people can do, which is wonderful. I love that. And you mentioned in regards to some YouTube videos, why don't we do this? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to give your website and people can go to the website, and I would imagine they can find out some of those things there as well. Would that be correct?
You would think that was true, but I will make sure we create a page right after today that has links to some of my favorite, how do you get your brain and body healthy so that it reduces helps your mood and your anxiety.
I love that. Thank you. So for everybody out there, so the website is Center for Brain, and that's the word for F-O-R. So it's C-N-T-E-R-F-R. If you're driving, don't try to write that down. We'll make sure that we have it at the answers.network website as well so that you can see the link there. We're going to take a break, but for everybody out there, obviously feel free to go open up the website, open up another window if you want to follow along that way. If you know somebody, if while you were listening to this, you were thinking, wow, I think I know who this could help, get a hold of them. Tell them to tune in either now or they can tune in later because it'll be saved in our archives. But I think that we all know somebody that could benefit from this. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation to ensure that to specialize schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And back, our guest, Neurofeedback 101, and we're learning a lot about not only the benefits of it, but how it works and why it works. Mike, I know you were sharing one of your stories that was the nurse practitioner. When I was going through your book, one of the case studies that you talk about that I thought was very interesting, and because it involved an 8-year-old girl that was having migraines that were so bad that she couldn't attend school. Can you share a little bit about that? Because I know that we have a lot of parents. This show used to be called Answers for the Family. So we have a lot of parents that are dealing with issues with their children. And I think that there's probably some out there wondering how it might help their children.
So I'm going to tell a story, and I must admit, I can't remember if this is exactly what is written in the book, but it's this is the story that I really want to tell because it's going to expand some on something that we haven't brought up yet. So this girl came, there was an 8-year-old girl who had this severe debilitating migraine. I mean, she had this particular one I'm talking about had gone to had five MRIs, had been to a number of neurologists. We're down in South Florida. She'd gone to the University of Miami you know, Children's Hospital, seeing the top people there. Nobody had a clue why she was having migraines. I mean, basically you look for, is there anything there? If you don't find it, you go, oh yes, you have migraines. You know, they're just trying to rule things out. So I don't quite know how she found her way to us. Her parents were actually health professionals, and they came. And the first thing that I asked, and this is not something maybe that you parents are thinking about, is I said, how far was she sleeping from the Wi-Fi router in the house? So Wi-Fi produces microwave energy. And if it produces more than 500 microwatts, not that anybody knows this, I have a meter that measures this per square meter, it can actually overstimulate the brain at night. So my experience is that if you are constantly getting bombarded by microwaves, it can produce effects from sleep to anxiety to migraines. And by the way, I have a neurologist colleague who actually, Dr. Robert Turner, who's writing a whole book chapter on the effects of EMF and Wi-Fi on brain signals.
Let me ask something. How far do you need to be away from that? Because I know that there are so many people that literally sleep with their phone or their computer.
That's bad.
You know, so, and I've actually gotten to, I now put it at the other end of the room, turn it off, you know, but I mean, you know, silence.
So
it, but
the phone should be 8 to 10 feet away.
8 to 10.
The Wi-Fi router should be, you really should turn it off at night. But if there's a distance, I actually recommend 50 feet. Now, if you're 30 feet, that's better than 10 feet. But 20 feet and less is not good.
Okay. So
line of sight. So let's think. So, no walls. Line of sight.
Line of sight as if the walls weren't there.
Correct.
Wow.
Now, is it going to kill you if you have that day to day? Okay. It's creating more neurostimulation all night. So if you're anxious or if you got migraines, you don't want more neurostimulation. You want your brain to rest completely. And sleep is the critical time because that's when your brain actually recovers. So if it's interfering with the quality of your sleep, that means you can wake up with a migraine. That means, how many kids am I seeing and teenagers who are chronically tired? Okay. If you're chronically tired, you got a sleep problem. Even if you say, I slept fine, but I'm tired all day, you know, or I'm anxious, I wake up anxious. You got a sleep problem. You should actually be waking up not anxious if you slept well. So we all kind of know this, but we're not going, this is actually a sleep problem. And if you have constant Wi-Fi exposure, that is an issue. I had a woman that was 27, chronic anxiety and sleep issues. I was going to do a brain map. We do brain maps to kind of identify. She had other problems too. And I asked her about her phone. She sleeps 2 feet from her phone, you know, and I'm like, well, can you just move it 8 feet to 10 feet away and turn off the router? She comes back 2 weeks later to go over the map. She says, oh, by the way, my sleep is significantly better. I did nothing. Mm-hmm. And I've had multiple cases of that. In this girl's case, 8, she was, the router was on the other side of the wall. And the dad and mom said 13 to 14 feet line of sight all night long. So they immediately made a significant change because they were very motivated. So turned things off, shut things down, changed. And I did 3 neurofeedback sessions. After the first neurofeedback session, she noticed headache was a little better because she had a headache when she came. We did 2 more neurofeedback sessions over the next week and a half. And that combined with turning off the router basically at night, no sign of a headache ever again.
I love it.
Now, I would like to say neurofeedback is so powerful. It took her migraine away completely in 3 sessions. That is probably... it helped, but it wasn't just that. It's not, I mean, yes, it will help, but not that quick. I mean, it helped her, and I think the combination was great. But so how many people are being exposed and have no idea that Wi-Fi is affecting their sleep quality or their anxiety or anything? I mean, but nighttime is in particular when it's so important.
So, I mean, it sounds like, I know that we have had a huge increase in ADHD, in anxiety. Do you believe that part of this increase has to do with the fact that, you know, we now, in almost every industrialized country, we're all sleeping with Wi-Fi?
So I can go off the deep end, but I like to listen to scientists. So
well, yeah,
I
have no, listened, please give us science.
I have listened to numerous scientists who have participated in research and reviewing research related to what the underlying mechanism of non-ionizing radiation, which is what microwave. I mean, would you mm-hmm. stick your head in a microwave? Nobody would do that. Would you hold a low-level microwave next to your head all day long or near your body all day long? Well, everybody's doing it. How could it possibly be bad? But when I listen to scientists or people who have really strong science backgrounds who know far more than me, and I read research papers that say, here is evidence that this is creating a problem, and even animal research that says 2 hours a day over a month increases cytokine inflammation. You've ever heard the word cytokine?
No.
Okay. So if you look up COVID is part, it's a cytokine inflammation storm. So if I'm dealing with COVID and I'm near Wi-Fi all the time, and I know there's research that suggests in animals that inflammation is increased, that's probably not a good combo. You probably want to not be near Wi-Fi when you're dealing with it. Now, I'm not saying specifically that. I'm just saying there's lots of things out there we don't know. But if you want to be on the conservative side and you want to say, let's hedge our bets and try not to do things that might not be good for us, the science suggests clearly, a ton of research, that this is not so good for us. Now, there's a San Francisco professor who says, if you look at all the research sponsored by industry, they say it's not that bad for us. And if you look at all the independent research by independent researchers, 70% to 80% say these are big problems for us. So a lot of, you can have controversy because there's a lot of dirt thrown in the air, but basically I'm just trying to be on the conservative side. I came at this from a brain standpoint. I just started going, how come so many of my clients are having these increased anxiety? How many, you know, increased sleep issues, increased ADHD, their stomach is bothering them. And by the way, guess what happens during when you are in shuttered in a house? So when you're shuttered in a house for 2 years, you are now sitting next to your Wi-Fi all day long. And so some of those high anxiety patients, I said, why don't you try reducing this stuff to see if it helps reduce your anxiety? And guess what? It did. Now, that doesn't mean it will for everybody, but lots of people have been, you're not out as much. So you're getting more close exposure. It's not, we all get exposure, but if you're distanced from it, it's not as big a deal. If you're around high power all the time, which is what happens when you're at home all the time.
Well, first of all, thank you. I mean, I'm loving this. I'm loving the information that you're providing everybody. But I also looking up and seeing that we only have about 3 minutes, and I wanted to get, there's a couple of listener questions.
Sure.
One says, I'm so excited to learn more about this topic. So I ordered your book and I'm awaiting its arrival. The last 2 years have been like nothing I've ever experienced. My level of stress over the future weighs heavy on my mind. I do not want to turn to medication. So I'm hoping this will help me on your biofeedback, helping with stress and anxiety. And if you can give me just the cliff notes part, because I got another question I'd like to squeeze in as well.
So that's who we see day in, day out. High stress, high anxiety, greatly escalated since COVID. And look, what does neurofeedback do? It just gives you a gym. It gives you a gym to say, I'm going to exercise the part of my brain that's supposed to help me keep calm and quiet my mind. And how do you do that? You got to have special equipment, because you got to have special equipment to do that. You can't make your mind do that, but you can exercise your mind just like you can a gym. It's a gym.
I like it. And the next question is, I received an email from a friend who just started neurofeedback sessions. She said a part of the process involved 3D images that show how your brainwaves compare with typical normal readings. Are you familiar with this method? I'm interested in anti-anxiety meds that I would like to get off of. I'm looking forward to listening to the show and to buying your book for guidance on the best approach to take. And by the way, the first one, again, because I want to thank these people, was from Vicky in California. This one is from Alex in Oregon.
So there are a lot of different types of systems, just like there's a lot of different exercise equipment. There's a lot of different types of systems that are available to do neurofeedback. I have, frankly, 5 or 6 in my office of different approaches. I do brain mapping. And one of the things you can do with brain mapping is to create a 3D image to go, how does my brain, what area of my brain lights up compared to the norm, to the average, that shouldn't be lighting up? So there's a variety of tools and techniques to do that. Sometimes I need that. Sometimes I go, gee, I've dealt with this. Let's, you know, like the girl start, let's start there. But there's a variety. So you need to really find a clinician who has a good set of tools and working knowledge who can work with you. And is there one right way? It's hard to answer that.
Is there an association of clinicians that people can look up if they want to find somebody in their area?
And that is mentioned in the book, but it's ISN as in Nancy, or neurofeedback, R as in research, the International Society of Neurofeedback and Research .org.
.org.
Now, there are other organizations, but that is the most, that's the one that's for more professionals, but there are more people than that. So not everybody joins that organization, but that's the main organization.
All right. The book is Neurofeedback 101. Again, I've been reading it myself over the last week. I love it. I thought I already knew some, but I'm gaining quite a bit of more information as well. And so, Mike, is there a best place to get it, or is it just available at where we all get books?
Yeah, where you get books. It's okay. Out there. I think, I mean, Amazon, but I don't know where else. But it's easy. I mean, it was really just written to be an easy read, and just so that I can't possibly explain everything here. And so it fills in some of the details, but it's still a very quick read.
Yeah, it really is. And so, yes, yeah, so whatever your favorite bookstore is, and also I'd love for everybody, if you've never spent time in a local bookstore in your town, check it out. It's a nice experience. And if you need something calming, that'll be the first step of it, because sometimes just walking in there will make you feel a little calmer. Mike, thank you so much for coming on. This is wonderful. It sounds like you were talking about either you or someone you know that has another book in the works.
A neurologist who's it's more of a text. That one's more of a textbook, but we're going to do some podcasts on the EMF thing. The neurofeedback is a tremendously powerful tool, but people also need to learn, you know, blood sugar, EMF. What else is triggering me? That's really what those other things are.
Okay. Well, I'd love to have you back. Maybe next time we'll focus more on those.
All right.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much. All right. For everybody out there, please be sure to join us next week when we are joined by Julie Wald. She's the author of Inner Wealth, How Wellness Heals, Nurtures, and Optimizes Ultra-Successful People. So when you're looking out there and you're going, wow, how does Elon Musk do this? Or some of their things. Julie's going to talk about some of those secrets. So be with us next week. And also go by the site, go by answers.network, visit our archives of past interviews, and or just subscribe to the show through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, YouTube, SoundCloud, and so many more platforms. And remember, if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It'll help us reach more people, and I want you to know that we greatly appreciate it. We're currently making a real push on Instagram, so we're putting out some some reels. So just some short clips. So if you're an Instagram person and you want to see some reels and think, well, do I really want to listen to or watch that particular guest? Go to our Instagram page, check it out. We'd love for you to follow us so that we can send you more information. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain, no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.